So basically you have a 3-day week here. So Wednesday you have the tuna schedule. Everyone should be in touch with me individually about that. So for the 2 days of shiur that we have today and tomorrow, we'll try to do as follows. Tomorrow we'd like to do parsha, since it will be our last chance to do so this week. Probably also maybe combine next week's parsha also, since we won't have a chance to do that. So maybe we'll try to do a little bit of Vayigash and Vayechi tomorrow.
I
don't know how far we can go with it. Right? I mean, get Shmos and Vayigash also, but we'll at least try to do two. So just get a little bit of a taste. And in terms of today, so our agenda will be, we'll play it by ear a little bit, which got to be some time you can make about that, but somehow we'll try to assess how much we can accomplish today. We started Dosh last week, so what I'd like to do today is to continue some themes of Dosh and kind of interweave it with the Halacha L'maisa discussion of Dosh, which also draws on some additional lumbus, so we'll try to just highlight some parts of that, which largely but not exclusively focus on schita as one of the major practical applications of dash. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. And then, time permitting, it would be good if we could chazer a little bit, since the previous chazara, so we've added Kotzer and Ma'amer and Dosh and talked also about Hanukkah, so it's unlikely we'll be able to chazer all of that, but we should try to give it a little bit of a push. So time permitting, maybe we'll try to do some triage, figure out what to focus on. But maybe we'll try, if we have time for Hanukkah, to cover a little bit of that. Okay, so first in terms of Sukkah, so the whole Sukkah was really a 2-blot long Sukkah, which I put on the original Maamar Chomos list. For those of you who saw there was an additional follow-up list this morning. So primarily it's a Mishnah on Kuf Mem Gimel on the days, where the Mishnah tells us that there is a prohibition to squeeze out peros in order to extract mashke from them. And as Rashi explains, this is essentially a function, apparently a tola, of dosh. That's how Rashi sounds in a few places. It's how Rashi sounds in Tzadkado also. It's also how Rashi sounds in Beitzan, Dav Gimel and Aleph. It's not how he sounds in Chulin. In Chulin, it's a little bit perplexing. There is a Rashi over there in Dav Yidal and Aleph, Diva Nasfo, Schita, where Rashi seems to say that Schita is an Av Malacha. So it's a little bit of a challenge to understand exactly what he's getting at over there, but he's outvoted by himself in other places where he certainly seems to land on the side of it being a tolda, and that's the way the Rambam sounds, and that seems to be the general attitude towards schita, that schita is indeed a tolda of dash. So whether or not it's the same schita when it comes to, let's say, fruit, and when it comes to clothes, there's a little bit of a discussion when it comes to garments, when it comes to cloths. So if you look, there is a very well-known Tosfos Masechet Tzuvos and Darbav and Aleph, it was on this morning's list, where Tosfos does assume that there is an issur schita regarding clothes, garments, in which liquid has been absorbed. If you've seen this Tosfos before, you probably have, because it's one of the major Tosfos in where he quotes the Aruch about the Psigreshi Bal Michalei. One of the major Tosfos in as far as that whole discussion, so it's always, I mean, Simon would say a collector's item Tosfos, definitely a Tosfos worth being aware of. So that Tosfos is relevant to this point as well. While others understand the whole garment issue a little bit differently, there's a Ramban about this in Kufir Aleph in the Beis, which was also on this morning's list, where it sounds like it's not necessarily a function of dash as much as it a function of malabe, sobeya. It's also what it sounds like from the Rambam. And the Ran, Kuf Yud Aleph Medeis, which is kedai to see, that the Ran quotes from Rabbeinu Tam that there are essentially two types of schita. There's a schita that's a tolda of dash, and there is a schita, it's a tolda of malabim. If you have a garment that has liquid in it, then you squeeze it out, so you are whitening, you're making this garment white, and therefore schita can be prohibited under that rubric as well. So these two sets of slita are both relevant in their own ways. They have their own rules. So, for example, in the context of Nisha, so we find at least on a level of Minat Torah, that perhaps it only applies when there is an interest in that which is being squeezed out, and if there is no such interest, then that's going to take away from its Nisha status. And when it comes to the other slita, the slita that's from the Labin, so then we're not necessarily interested at all in what's being extracted, but it doesn't necessarily apply to everything. Not all slita is going to cause a whitening of the garment. If it's something that squeezing it out is going to make a difference, such as water, or perhaps other liquids, the whole discussion won't get into all the details, so then perhaps it applies, but if it's the type of squeezing where you're still going to, say, have red wine, so you're going to squeeze it out, maybe but your garment's still going to be just as stained red as it was before, so then it's not necessarily the case that there is a skita that is a function of malabe there. So apparently, the usury shown and maintained, and this seems to be the view that many posts can take, such as the Taz and the Mugin of Rum, that there are essentially two forms of slita to be aware of, and each has its own limitations and its own rules. The Rambam also seems to focus on sochet as a different issue when it comes to garments. When it comes to garments, sochet is not necessarily dash in the Rambam's understanding. He talks about it being mechabes, about it being laundering, and that it's mitzorche kibbutz. And it's just worth noting that there are those who connect this Rambam to a Rambam we saw earlier. Remember when we talked about in Malacha Zoreya, that the Rambam says, based on the Gemara, but changing the Gemara, that if somebody soaks flax, let's say, in, soaks wheat in water, so flax is what the Gemara talks about, the Rambam applies it to wheat, so if somebody soaks wheat in water, so the Gemara, so the Rambam understands that he could be chayiv mishum zoreya for that. And we saw that there were different understandings on why the Rambam says this. And the Rabbaz's understanding is that the reason the Rambam is mechayiv for that is because this is something you do in preparation for Zriya. And that he has expanded understanding that anything that you do that prepares for a malacha is also included in the malacha. So through here, he understands you're going to squeeze out a garment. That's something that's done in preparation for laundering it. So therefore, that is also a malacha in that category. So this is an issue that comes up in a lot of different areas, and there are a lot of different potential applications. I'll mention in that context that Rav Nachman Bishtetner has an interesting tshuva about this, where he talks about somebody wants to walk outside, and let's say there are mats outside, or there are other types of coverings on the ground that are soaked wet. Let's say it's been raining. So if you're going to walk on them, you're for sure going to squeeze out water. So should we say there's an issue of slita involved? So he thought that there were a number of reasons to be made all about this. First of all, so you're not interested in the water that's going to come out. That's not going to service you at all. Secondly, it's a psigratia glow mutilate. You're not doing it on purpose and you're not interested at all in what's happening. And also that it's kala'achayag. It's done with the foot. It's done not the normal derech of slita. So he thinks all of that is already a reason to remake the reports in the Sora issues like this when you have already three studs in Mohakil, that's enough to be make. He also adds that maybe there's a cover of Rios aspect that this is so that you shouldn't have to walk on the cold floor. So then you have an idea that cold has a status of holy, people are exposed to cold, especially if you come from an environment where you're not used to it. So then you have a greater sensitivity to cold. Maybe that's also a different side to be makel. So he mentions that also. He also mentions a svara which others bring up in different contexts. Some hold from this idea, some don't hold from this idea, that you could say that the slita doesn't accomplish anything because the ground is soaked also. Right? So as soon as you squeeze the water out, it's just going to absorb new water. So it's a question whether or not that even counts as slita. If you're just trading the new water for the old water, is that really effective in any way? So you point sometimes that svara towards them, some svara, some hold from it, some don't hold from it, but he throws that into this discussion as well. So he says, okay, so fine, that's all very well and good when we look at the slita that's connected to dash, but the slita that's connected to melabing, is that also going to not be a problem here? So there he maintains as a yisod that any time that it's derech lichlo, right, this is not something that's going to clean off what you're stepping on at all. In general, stepping on something where you're muddy shoes is usually not in the interest of laundering it, usually not in the interest of whitening it. So we think that that's a fair yesod deposit, and any time something is derech lichluch, that that's already going to not be that type of schita either. So in that case, there's many grounds to be making. So when it comes to referring for a second to squeezing fruits, so there is a prohibition to squeeze fruits out for their juices, although primarily the Issa Daraisa only applies to those items which are primarily for that purpose, that are only the Sita, which is primarily Zaysim and Anavim. So you have grapes and you have olives, which produce respectively wine and olive oil. So these are two items which are very much of interest for their squeezability. So that's when you have a real Issa Daraisa. And then you have other categories, which is on a different level. Hi.
What about oranges nowadays?
So then you have a whole other middle category. So then the Mara
talks. I'm saying you, because nowadays, like, the Shita of Chazudish for oranges in general, you shouldn't be making nowadays. So according to that, would that also be under this category of the Daraisa?
Well, so there's a middle category. That's what we're about to get to. That there's a, the Gemara brings up another category, that when there's a Minig HaOlam to also, at least in some places, to also squeeze out for their juices. So then that's us in the Drabanim. That applies to berries and to pomegranates. And that also seems to include a whole range of other fruits that are contemporarily used for that purpose. So oranges would certainly at least be in that category. And that would be an Issa Drabanim. And we're afraid you're going to come to squeeze Issa Drabanim. So all of that is certainly us, or at least the Drabanim. It seems that if there is an item which is not conventionally used for its juices anywhere in the world, that's a whole discussion. Where in the world, everywhere in the world, where you are, that's an extensive discussion, a little bit outside of our scope today. So then it seems like it's not us or even the Drabanim. The Mishnah does say that there is a Isser Drabanim, a Knas that was made, that if juices came out of these fruits even without your intentionally doing it, so then that's going to be usher to use also, because we're afraid once we're letting you use the juice that comes out, so then maybe you're going to want to produce some more, maybe you'll want to squeeze some more. So we make a prohibition against using that which came out on Shabbos, even if it came out on its own. And primarily that really applies to Zaysim and Anavim also, and not so much to the other fruits, unless you're interested in the juices. If you have a fruit which happens to have, well, you're not primarily interested in the juices, but juices come out, so then you don't have to worry about it so much. A fruit where you are, where the juices is of interest, so then Chazal apparently did uphold this Zera D'Rabbanan, excuse me, in that context as well. If you have already existing juice from before Shabbos, and fruits are together with that juice, so some fruits seep, some juice seeped out on Shabbos into the existing juice, so then the poskim assume, based on the Rishonim, to the Mordechai, that one can rely on bittul in that case, assuming that there is a proportionately greater amount of pre-existing juice, then you don't have to worry that the juice that went into there is necessarily going to aser the pre-existing juice. One of the major issues that could be relevant for the upcoming weeks, let's hope not so much, especially those of us who aren't used to cold climates, but the question of chopping up ice. There was a major discussion, we alluded to it a little bit when we talked about Koresh. So we talked about shoveling snow on Shabbos, and we talked about, we alluded to the fact that there are some related issues. So one of the related issues has to do with breaking up ice. So the Mishnah talks about it in a more proactive context. Somebody has ice. This is a Mishnah and an Aleph Nevez, which we put on this morning's list as well. It's a question of the Girsa, a Miraskin, a Miraskin. You're not supposed to try to break up ice that you have on Shabbos in order to try to extract liquid from it. If you want, you can put it into a cup, that's okay. And even though it's going to melt on its own, Sarah Mishnah and the Gemara in the end of the end of the fourth parak, and then Aleph and the Beis. Right, the Emraz can loas hashalag loas abar the Shabbos b'shvil she is over meimav. Right, so you shouldn't break this up in order to get the liquid out of it. About nosin who lasocha kos o lasocha ka'ara ve'eno choshesh. But you can put it into a cup and you don't have to worry about it. So it's an interesting debate. There is a Ran who's, I don't think I put the Ran in the Rambam comments, I did put Rashi in the Rambam. It's a whole discussion what exactly the soul of this issue is. So it sounds like from the Rambam that this is a gzeira mishum schita, that this isn't real schita, but that this looks like schita. If you can essentially try to extract the water from ice, so you could also then come to squeeze fruits and try to get their liquids out of it. So therefore, we prohibit it for that reason. While Rashi, if you look here, Rashi over here in the Aleph and the Beis, Rashi seems to understand that it is an issue of molid. We're not even really 100% sure what that iser is. Some type of an iser drabanan, which is symbolic of all the malachas. It's not a specific malacha. But if you look at Rashi over here in Aleph and the Beis, Mishum dekam molid the Shabbos. The domin the malacha, shebori hamayim ha'ilu. So what malacha is that comparable to? Who knows, but it's comparable to the whole theme of malacha. That you're not supposed to create on Shabbos, so to create things is a no-no. So it looks like you're creating water out of the ice, so that's Rashi's problem. Which both Rambam and Rashi sounds like it's about a functional thing that you're doing, either that you are being sochet or that you are creating, but that is not so much an issue of it happening passively. The Ran, which I didn't put on the list, but you should take a look, the Ran quotes the Sefer HaTrumah with Daniel Baruch, where he puts a passive focus on it, that there's an issue of the water being nola, and that you're creating that. So that's a question in general, how to paskin on that. The Shulchan Aruch paskin is more that it's a function of the action. And the Ramah says it's kedai to worry about the view of the Sefer HaTrumah of the Rebbe Nevarah. In practice, in terms of the ice outside, so almost all the postmen are naked on this. Certainly the vast majority of postmen are naked, especially considering the very severe sakana that's involved with ice outside, to throw salt on ice in order to allow it to melt. You have a couple of studs in the Mahako there already. It's different, especially because you're not interested at all in the water. You don't want to obtain the water. The water's not even going to be collected anywhere. You're not going to see the water. You're just interested in the ice going away. And also, it's indirect. This is grumma, that it doesn't melt right away. You're not actually chopping up the ice. You're putting the salt there, and the salt will eventually cause the ice to disappear. So again, this is certainly something we recommend doing in Mokum Sofana and Shabbos. You know, there are those who are concerned, but I think the consensus seems to be the hakel on this. And also, the less prevalent practice of throwing sand onto the ice, which is there to make it less slippery. It's a different issue. It's not really an issue of the same category. Potentially, one could raise the issue of bonai, or doing something to build a new level to the ground, but the postmen don't seem to think on a normal paved ground that that's what's going on. The sand is not meant to stay there forever. The sand is going to be washed away. It's not going to last there. No one has intention for it to stay there. It's only there for this temporary functional purpose. So it doesn't seem to be that the bone issue is a practical issue either. In terms of the whole question of the Rebbeinu Baruch and the Rambam and Rashi, so if you want to figure out exactly how it works out, and the fact that Shulchan Aruch is a longer discussion, but the really good Rav Mordechai in the Sefer Shabbos has an essay about this, highly recommended if one wants to work through all the cheshbonos about the different views related to that. A major issue of perhaps surprising kula when it comes to dosh has to do with peeling fruit. One might think that peeling fruit should really be a pretty good example of dosh. It seems like it really is pretty doshing, or pretty dashing. And it does seem to fit the definition pretty well. And yet, it's surprising to find just how much is mutter in this area. And the Heterim, and the Ribiyat actually has a long essay about this in his Ohel Dabur, in the back of the Hebrew essays, where he advances these positions particularly. As he maintains, there are essentially two major reasons to be matir. One reason is that perhaps Dosh, this one's a little bit more outside, no pun intended, but that maybe Dosh only applies to a real external shell, while the type of peel that you usually find on fruits are very thin layers that are closely connected, essentially wrapped around the fruit, and that's not called dash. Dash is more like, for example, maybe the outer casing of a walnut, which is really a completely outside covering. Then you have dash, but a very close, thin layer of covering is not called dash, and that's a little bit of a Makudish idea. But the other idea, which is perhaps a stronger approach, and is found in a number of major poskim, is that the function of dash, the way it is in the Mishkan, is this was a part of the processing that happened from the tree, and that the way it was done is it would be done as a matter of course. As soon as you take off, as soon as you finish your ma'amer, let's say, so then you progress to dash, regardless of the fact that you're not eating this food anytime soon. You are now then sending it to the next stage. But the type of peel, the type of outside layer that tends to remain on the food until you're about to eat it, so then perhaps that's different than dash. That's just functionally different than dash. So, for example, you have an orange peel, or you have an apple peel. So this is the kind of covering that you're going to keep there until you're ready to eat it. It's not something that's being processed in advance. So many postmen thought that that was grounds to be made. That's a very significant tether, and could apply to many different foods, and really kind of redefines what one maybe would have thought otherwise about this issue. You know, some of the foods then become a little bit complicated. So for example, peanuts are also, again, a little bit more of a discussion. But it seems that Minhag HaOlam is to make about peanuts also for a number of reasons, even though there you have a little bit more room for questioning. But again, this is an area where there are significant criteria mentioned. Yes?
Why would peanuts be more complicated? Because it's also a similar type of peel that you just take off, right?
Right, so it has one of these two criteria. And so the covering is really external to it. It's
right.
Not like this thin layer that's wrapped around
that's
the edible part. So there's a little bit more of a discussion about it, but it seems that the Minigolo needs to be maker about that
and
as well.
Is the second answer saying that there is a peel or not?
Yeah, so it doesn't seem to only be based on that, because as we discussed, you know, that is a reason to consider as well, but as we discussed, it's not 100% Muslim whether or not there is such a heter like that when it comes to Gisha. Some will say there is, whether a Ba'alter is a heter, whether a Ba'alter and Derech HaKhila are the same thing. We'll get into that more when we get to Borer, related. So there is that cheshvin, but it seems that even separate from that cheshvin, that maybe this is just not the kind of dush that was done. Mishkan dash is more an aspect of processing the food, and here this is not the case. The food just stays like this until you're just about to eat it. So maybe that's never called dash in the first place. So then there are a few other. Listen.
Without the zarek pisa, if you're off the tree, he's going to eat it right away. Still see it.
How do you know he's going to eat it right away?
What else would he do?
Let's take it home.
It's
always going to be edible right away by definition, but it doesn't necessarily mean any of it right away.
So it's also, he's going to sell it, that means it's dash, but if you were going to...
Well, that's always what we're talking about. It, by definition, it's always going to be edible right away, unless it's being borrowed still. So. But for the most part, that's certainly going to be the case. The point is not so much that you could eat it right away, the point is coming from the other direction, that normally you would keep it on until right before you're about to eat. So that you're looking at it the other way. You're looking at it that if you can eat it now, it should be okay. That's not what this heter is saying. It's not that it's okay if you can eat it now. It's okay if you would leave the peel on until you can eat it. Until you're ready to eat it, until you want to eat it. So that's the point of focus. If you're going to leave it, most people are going to leave the orange peel on until they're ready to eat it. So that's what this is talking about. A few others, God, the Yafan Lahakel. For example, if you look in the Sefer Halacha Shel Shabbos, he lists off a couple of Yesh Omrims, which are also perhaps relevant to is that if you are going to, let's say, do mafarid, you're going to separate one part of the food from the other, from the non-edible part, with your mouth as a part of eating it. So then again, derech achila may be a heter as well. So too, it could be that, and this has been mentioned a little bit also, we talked about some of the possible comparisons to borer, that if you're leaving some of the food on the non-edible part, you're not completely separating it, but you're just biting off the part and leaving some food together on the non-food part, so then there's yeshomim that that's also okay. And also there are those who understand you have, if you're mafarik just a little bit at a time, so you can eat only the time, and then you keep going one at a time like that, that all of these, there are those who are makel on. I should just add one other point, then maybe we'll try to fazer a little bit some of the other issues. So we won't spend a lot of time talking about nursing, because we talked about that extensively with some other points. We talked about halacha shenitzvah for the gufa, and we talked about tzar in that context. I just want to mention one practical point. So as we said in that context, that there seems to be a iser val when a child nurses normally, so then that's the child's derech achila, that's one thing. But for a nursing mother to pump the milk out, so that seems to be an iser of cholev, which we saw last week may possibly be an iser rabbanon, which would help, but it sounds like it's some type of tolda of dush. But the issue is that the mother wants to do this normally not because she's interested in the milk, but because she's in great pain and possibly subject to infection. So that has the element of being a malacha shenitzvah. The gufa may also have the element of not even being gusha in the first place, because again, if you're not interested in the milk, so then that's possibly not even the definition of gusha. So all of these are major stod and lahakel. The question is, how do you make sure that that's established as the case, that you don't want the milk? So we saw that there is somewhat of a debate about, can you put it into a kli if the purpose of the kli is just to stop the mess? It's not because you want to hold it to use it, it's because otherwise it's an even messier process. So one answer that we didn't mention at the time, but which many advocate for, is man hazeh, if you put it into a kli, but you put, let's say, soap into the kli, you put something that's going to make it inedible, so then you can accomplish both, presumably, because that will be the statement that you're not interested in keeping it, and interested in using it, but also won't have the functional problem of not having a kli. So that is an eitzah that many recommend with manazan, and that's probably a good idea. Okay, so any questions on any of that so far? Okay, so those are some halacha ma'isa points about dash. It's a very extensive halacha in terms of its own darim, in terms of sleepa, in terms of cholev, in terms of all that, a lot to say. But those are some of the key points that it's useful to know about. We didn't get into that full discussion. We talked about breaking up the ice. So molid is its own discussion, whether or not that's a concern or not, and whether the Beit Baruch is concerned. Maybe we'll find an opportunity to get into that a little bit more, about the question of making ice on Shabbos, maybe in the context of Bona. We'll talk about that. I heard at a Sobolowski, like, for those of you in Rosh HaKolo, they have an ice machine, or they still do, they have an ice machine that is always going, always creating new ice. So there's the question then whether that ice is problematic on Shabbos, if it's being created on Shabbos. You mentioned that the eitzah that they had when they originally put the machine in was that Friday afternoon, all the ice that was already in the machine, they would put in a garbage bag and put that garbage bag back in the machine, and the machine was still on. So those who want to be laughing for this, but that produced the ice that was only created before Shabbos, to put the ice out of the garbage bag, and it was a elu type of suggestion. Okay. So now that's in a few minutes we have left. Let's try to maybe just hit some of the highlights, at least of Kotzer and Ma'amer, so we can get some of those points down. So we mentioned, for example, we'll just try to pick out some important points. So for example, when it comes to Kotzer, so our Gemara and Ayin Gimel in the days lists a number of actions which are associated with Kotzer. Kotzer, Goder, Moser, Gora, all of those are malacha achas, and all of those essentially really do seem to be literally one malacha, the same type of action taking place with different materials. And that's not surprising that the Rambam lists all of those as avos. Rashi probably does also, which is derived from the fact that Rashi, in the context of Zareya, seems to apply the title of Zareya to a lot of different types of planting with different materials. So presumably the same thing is the other way around, that Kotzer applies on the av level to all of these, and some Rishonim disagree, some Rishonim said only Kotzer is an av, and the rest is a tolda. When it comes to Zomer, the Gemara says Zomer v'tzorach la'itzim is also Kotzer, so that the Rambam understood as an av, and Rashi said that was a tolda of Kotzer. There the Ran focuses on a thing similar to Kotzer, where he points out that in the case of Kotzer, seemingly defining Kotzer this way, as a number of others do as well, that maybe Kotzer always requires that you need the item that you are taking off. So if you take off something you don't need it, it could be that maybe that's not Kotzer. That was a topic of debate among Rishonim and Achronim, as we mentioned then. So why would Rashi say that's a tolda of Kotzer? Why would Rashi say that taking off the branches that you want is a tolda of Kotzer as opposed to an av? So we mentioned, some suggest this could be connected to the Dvar of Rav, who among many other things that he says about this topic, he suggests that Kotzer and Gozes are all about separating A from B, they're not about separating A from A. So separating a fruit from a tree, that could be Kotzer, separating a branch from a tree, which is A from A, that's not going to be considered Kotzer. Then we talked a little bit about the shear of Kotzer, about the shear presumably being like a grogris, around that size, similar to other food-related shiurim, although it may depend on what you want to do with it. And we mentioned the prima gadim safek, what if somebody is Kotzer, two separate Chati shears, and they're not around at the same time, so is that considered to be Sarif? Is that considered to join to one Malacha? And that threw the focus to the question of what are we doing when we're Kotzer? Are we trying to obtain a whole shear, or are we doing an act of Tzira, which the two halves can combine, even if they're not both around anymore? And in general, a lot of the issues that came up with Kotzer, we tried to suggest that the general focus on Kotzer should be a positive Kotzer, a positive focus, because a lot of our attempts to define what Kotzer is about seem to be somewhat negative, about essentially killing something, taking it out of the source of life, cutting it off, and as we noted, it doesn't seem to conform with our focus on Malacha being something positive. A Malacha has to have a constructive purpose, so when it comes to Kotzer, presumably Kotzer is about a positive focus, about creating an independent identity for something that we want, part of the stage of production, of obtaining this produce from where it comes from, and that involves separating it from somewhere else, but we have this positive focus, again reflected in the fact that there are those who even suggest that if we're not interested in the item that we are being Kotzer, maybe not even Kotzer in the first place. And then we got into the whole discussion of whether there's Tzira only in the context of Gedulei Karka or other things as well, which a lot of the Rishonim do assert that that is the case, that Ein Kotzer Ela B'Gedulei Karka, primarily the Rashba, and Kazayin Rebeis, and probably many others as well. And the Rashba there assumes that this is a machlokus between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi has examples of Kotzer involving taking fish out of water. For example, there's also a discussion which the Bavli has about Bavli talks about taking fish out of water also, but doesn't explicitly call it Kotzer. And the Bavli also talks about reaching your hand into the womb of a pregnant animal and taking out the fetus, taking out the uber, and the Yerushalmi sounds like all of that is Kotzer, as to maybe some Yerushalmi, but from the Bavli it's not necessarily clear that's the case. It could be it's not focused, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, about whether the Malacha of Kotzer is only applicable to Gedulei Karka. And then we saw in that context the discussion which is relevant to a number of other Malachas, particularly Disha and Mahamer as well, about can we have a more expansive definition of Gedulei Karka? Can animals be considered Gedulei Karka as well, as some of the Rishonim seem to be open to? And we saw that that's possible. There are some posters in the Shink to say there is a definition of the Gudei Karka, which could be extended to animals, but it's a little bit of a difficult position to take. We've mentioned, especially in the context of Zastra's Parsha, that maybe it's only true in the abstract, but when it's compared to actual Gudei Karka, it's not called Gudei Karka. And we also mentioned an approach that some have, maybe it's already implicit in the Ramban, certainly the Acharonim say it, that even if you want to have a more expansive definition, it's less likely to apply to Kotze, because if you have other things, let's say Dosh or Kofen, so you're dealing with Gedulei Karka at a later stage. So maybe you can have a broader definition. But if you want to follow what happened in the Mishkan, so in the context of Kotze, the Kotze in the Mishkan was done at the stage and was still connected to the ground, so presumably when we're talking about Gedulei Karka, we're talking about literal Gedulei Karka, not about something which could more abstractly be called Gedulei Karka and expanded to a broader definition. And then we discussed the big debate between the Bar Avraham, the very long Bar Avraham, I don't know if anyone had a chance to take a look at it, and the Ritz of the Panavisher about the definition of Kotzer, the Bar Avraham maintaining that it was a machlokes between the Bavari and the Yerushalmi, that according to the Yerushalmi, it's about cutting something off from its source of life, okedavar mi gidulo, and according to the Bavli, it's a different definition. It's about tlisha ben mechubar. It's about separating something which is connected, not necessarily about a source of life per se. And the Vislapana version 3, he said Mlach is all about psika stia, it's all about cutting something off from its energy. And then we saw there was some discussion about if you have, let's say, branches of a tree that are cut off from the tree and not nourishing it, but they're still hanging on. So then what's the status of fruits connected to that? Or what's the status of fruits that have totally dried up on the tree and that are not getting nourishment from the tree anymore? It seems to be a machlokes rishonim, whether or not there is an issur tolish connected to that. All relates to this question of what exactly tolish seems to be in its essence. And then we saw connecting both Tolesh and Kotzer and Dosh is this Gemara at the end of the discussion of Gemara 9 Gimel Mibayz about somebody who throws a clump of earth at a date tree and knocks down the date. So first Rav Papa says, Rechayev Shayim, Achas Mishum Tolesh, Achas Mishum Rafarek, and Avashi says, no, ain't there a Flisha Bekaf, ain't there a Krika Bekaf. You can't be chayiv either for those because it's neither derech flisha or derech prika. And we saw there was a whole discussion about what Rashi's opinion is, because Rashi here says that, yeah, the derech is only either biyad or bekli. And many assume that kotzer is bekli and tolesh is biyad, and therefore otherwise it's not considered to be kederech. And some thought this was a contradiction to a Rashi and Sukkah. Now, Rashi and Sukkah says that you should be careful with the zayir against smelling an esrog on a tree, and we're worried that maybe you'll come to eat the esrog. And if you eat the esrog off the tree, so Rashi says there's no greater flisha than that. That's a massive flisha. So some feel this is a contradiction. Here he says it's only kederek from the hand, and in Sukkah it sounds like he says it's kederek when you do it with your mouth too. So some, like the Magen Avraham, tilt in favor of Rashi and Shabbos and say that that's not a real fee of the rice if you eat it with your mouth off the tree. And others, such as the Mechor Shor, and the Rav Kol, and others say, no, it can't be, that's a real malacha, taking it off the tree with your mouth is a real malacha, and Rashi and Shabbos just didn't feel the responsibility to list it off. So that's, we'll have a notable discussion. And we also mentioned as a general Shabbos point, so there are some Rishon who understand from here that the Disha happens when you knock the tree, and the fruit falls off the tree and it lands on the ground, so the kotzer is when it separates from the tree, and the mefarik happens when it lands on the ground. So that's interesting because it seems to say you could be chayav for something that was really kofos. You provoked it and then it happened secondarily. So if that's the case, that's surprising because we saw that the Arsamach and others maintained that kofos was too far removed from your own action to be considered a malach on Shabbos, so this is an unusual application. Okay, so that was a lot of what we said about the longest approach that we got.
Could you say that
Can you look out maybe to misbehave about cocoa or not? Because really you're doing the one action that causes something else to happen, not that you do. Meaning your one action is the only thing that happened which caused the malacca. The cocoa would be where you cause one thing to happen to cause the malacca to happen.
But here, you call, you threw it, that was your
call. Right, you threw it, and that caused, which is a malacca.
Right, and then it landed.
And so all the direct results from your direct call caused that to happen.
But the landing on the floor
was also
a result of it. Right, that's always going to be what caused cocoa. That's always going to be the result of something you started. But there's an extra step in
between. No, but the actual result that you did was also a malacca.
Because of the malacca in between, that you also?
Maybe.
That you like restart the camp? Interesting. Okay. So we mentioned in terms of some of the halacha folks are also, so that's some of the rabbanans, the two major rabbanans, the shtamshus for Elon and the shtamshus for the Hema, that there is a prohibition to use a tree, put stuff on a tree, to climb on a tree. All of this is prohibited because we're worried about kotzer, we're worried that you're going to come to break off a branch when you're doing this. These gemaras, some of which were a whole challenge to the question of some of the tzara ha'etzer, because if we assume that you're only in violation of kotzer when you want the wood, so here, why are you going to do it accidentally if it could be possibly kotzer anyway? So we saw some rishonim deny that whole principle, some rishonim say it's a different malacha involved. Or some say that maybe no, you're going to decide you want the wood when you're there. You're going to forget a Shabbos, so that's the issue. But in any event, so we have this gezeirah that you shouldn't use trees really in any way, unless it's seed-based sludging, but if it's connected to something connected to the tree, so then there's nothing to remove. We saw that the appropriately named Oral David, the Riviat, has this topic about tree houses. What exactly is the category for that? But then we mentioned the really incredibly unusual gazera that we find here, an unusual knas that we find here, that somebody who goes up on a tree on Shabbos, the nezer is not allowed to come down. So it's a very, very difficult gazera to understand on a number of levels. In real life, how it's going to come up is very hard to imagine, because you need somebody who doesn't care enough who's going to go up to the nezer, but it's going to be firm enough not to come down. So he has a real epiphany just at that moment that he's up there on the tree. So it's a very hard idea to understand. One could even argue that that itself should be an act of tshuva, which would maybe make the original act into a shogeg, okay? But that apparently was not the case. But it's a very unusual type of situation. And part of the complexity that we saw is that it seems that the issue is we shouldn't go down because that's also using the tree, but staying up there is also using the tree. So we continue to use the tree by standing up and not by staying up there, and not to use the tree by coming down. So that's a whole discussion trying to analyze why we prefer for you to stay up there rather than come down. That's one issue. Maybe it's Sheval Tasa, very literally, which somehow makes it better. Or that also provokes a discussion that some have, a kua, that if you jump off the tree without climbing down, so then that's not included in this concern of using the tree. Some have such a kula, some don't agree with that kula, but that all flows from this idea that the issue of coming down is that it's a further usage of the tree. Now, we also mentioned further limiting the application of this, that if it's cold or dangerous, so then a person is able to come down, a person who went up a shogeg, if it's a child, the person should be allowed to come down, and if it's a kavod abriya situation, which for sure is going to come up, because the person is going to, unless the person did this 2 minutes before Shabbat, probably going to need to use the facilities at some point. So the exact application of this knas, very hard to imagine how often it's going to come up, but nonetheless, it exists. And then there is the question of using animals. So using animals is a concern, apparently, also that you're going to rip off a branch while you are riding your horse in order to gently and respectfully guide your horse with a branch. And you're closer to the branches, presumably, also once you are riding on top of a horse. But nonetheless, you don't need those circumstances for it to be also. So in Chazal, actually, broadly, so any using of an animal, even if you're riding a aardvark in the middle of the desert, where it doesn't really seem very likely that you're going to be ripping off any branches. Nonetheless, this is a broad gezeira that doesn't allow you to use animals at all. Okay, so those are some of the highlights that we said about kotzer. I'd like to quickly throw in some ideas about ma'amer before we run out of time. Any questions about anything so far? Okay, so then let's try to just review some of the thoughts about ma'amer. So ma'amer, a very mysterious malacha. The Gemara tells us very little about it. All it says is the one line that it rejects, basically, although it's not focused whether it rejects it. Amar Rava or Rava, which is part of the issue with the proper girsa. Haiman de kanef milcha, mi milcha se chayim mishon ma'amer. If you're going to gather salt from the place in the banks of the water where the salt has gathered because the water evaporated, leaving salt there on the side, so then that's going to be a chiyav of ma'amer. But then says Abaye, no, that's not the case. Any more eligible to do a tarka, it only applies when you're dealing with that which grows. So it's not 100% clear who wins in that debate. That's itself a discussion. And there are many other possible limitations on ma'amer. As we mentioned, there's some suggest, including the missing Zaks and his footnotes on the post was read, that it seems that what the Rishonim were struggling with is that ma'amer doesn't seem to have the chashivas of a malacha. It's very hard to define. It's very hard to see as a concrete, definitive act. And it's the kind of malacha that maybe you would have otherwise called the malacha gerua. So therefore, the Rishonim felt that there has to be something more to it. So there's a lot of discussion about what exactly might be a requirement. First of all, there's an extensive discussion about whether or not it has to be tied together. A lot of Rishonim maintaining that possibly it does need to be tied together. Others possibly disagreeing. There's a big discussion about this in the Ma'arach or Zaruah. We mentioned that it's possibly relevant to a Rashi in Vayesha, and as Rabbi Bishdetna points out, and the Pasuk says, Ma'amim Arumim, so there, Unkla says, Ma'asrin Asarit, tying together, and Rashi adds the word over, it sounds like Ma'amim means to be tied together. So that's a whole discussion in and of itself. So that was one possibility, one issue, whether or not it has to be tied together. We mentioned also the Tosfos Ritz Chiddush, which essentially says that Ein Ma'amer Acher Ma'amer, which is the way he's interpreted, it could be related to the idea that Ma'amer has to be specifically B'makom Gidulo, which is a discussion of itself. And it's a big question because the Rambam paskens that you could be Chayav Ma'amer for making a fig cake, which doesn't seem to take place B'makom Gidulo. So some maintain the Rambam doesn't accept this holy yisod. Problem is the Shulchan Aruch does, so that's a whole discussion how to interpret that Shulchan Aruch. Is he basically saying there are two different types of ma'amer? Maybe it depends on how things are normally done. That itself was a whole discussion as well. We also mentioned some interesting sfeikus in the shir of ma'amer, the Egloi Tal's position that ma'amer, when you're gathering something, has to be a grogers, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the part that you're picking up as a grogers. If you add it to an existing pile, so then if that pile is larger than a grogers, then that could also already be ma'amer. It means that we're focusing not just on what you're picking up, but we're focusing on the file, on the pile that you are creating, even if it was already there from before. And we mentioned also the safek in the mechassina, if a person, say, connects, gathers together a chatzishir, and then separates it, gathers it again. So he does a maisa gimur on a full shir, but he hasn't gathered together a full shear, so what are we focusing on? Are we focusing on the act of gathering, or are we focusing on that which he has created? So that's itself a whole discussion. And then we talked also about this whole concern about the Gedulei Karka, which comes up in the Gemara, as we saw already, and it's a discussion how exactly we paskin. And the Michas Kinech wanted to suggest a further chiddush that maybe we should only limit ma'amer to food, only to Oakland. This is based on not such strong evidence. It was based on the Rambam had the language of Ama'amir Oakland in La'achila. If somebody is gathering Oakland for the purpose of the La'achila, it's redundant. So Nechaskina thought the Rambam was emphasizing that it only applies to Oakland. And if you want to say that's what Rashi was coming to argue on, a fascinating point, because the Gemara later on has a very important discussion about the most famous Mechal Shabbos in history, about the kosher sheitzim. So as famous as he is, it's not clear what malacha he was doing. So the Gemara has a couple of different interpretations. One interpretation is he was doing ma'amir, and Rashi says, yeah, ma'amir, you know, ha'man de kanef malach and ofisler. So the Nechasinah says, why does he point to there? Why doesn't he point to the Mishnah, which tells us ma'amir is a malacha? So he wants to suggest, because the Rambam would go against this opinion. The Rambam would say ma'amir is only by ofisler. So Rashi is quoting this Gemara to show you even not by ofisler, because Rashi holds that malach is not food. Rashi and Mubashur. So that was the point. So that's a whole discussion in itself. It does not seem the halacha, like the Nechasinah's invitation, is accepted. Although the Dvar Yehoshua has an interesting discussion about it, where he says that you might argue, well, the Mishnah, if it was the Samamanim, that they were being Ma'amer, so then maybe those weren't edible. So he says, no, certainly at least some of them were edible. But if only some of them were edible, so it comes out that they did Ma'amer in the Mishnah by non-Oakland also. So he says, it doesn't matter because it has to be chashuv in the Mishkan, and Chazal understood that only by Othlin is Ma'amir chashuv. A fascinating idea. But again, Ma'alacha doesn't seem to be this is accepted, and that even if the Gula Karka is accepted, it could be this even broader definition of the Gula Karka. So, for example, minerals that are derived from the ground, that don't grow from the ground, many understood is also subject to Ma'amer, and therefore even though salt, which is about to be excluded in the Gemara from being the Gula Karka, it could be that's not true if we're talking about rock salt, the salt that is taken directly from the ground as opposed to being washed ashore like the salt that the Gemara talks about. It could be that there is a possibility of Ma'amer in that context. I mentioned there were some other limitations that the Rishonim talked about, that the Meiri says, the others have as well, that it has to be collected for the purposes of the pile, not for some other purpose, such as to clear the space. The Rebbeinu Hananel seems to say that it has to be collected among a Dalet Amos territory, which is an interesting extension as well. And there is a very major tzad, that in the area, a major relevant point, that many folks can assume that anything that's been processed beyond its natural state is no longer subject to ma'amer. So even if something started off as a tree, started off as a mineral, but it's now been manufactured into a toy, or it's now been baked into bread, so then it's no longer subject to ma'amer. You don't have to worry that holding your two phallus together is going to be considered ma'amer. Ma'amer is no longer relevant to that stage. Let me talk. Sorry? So flour, theoretically, could be that you have a lot of different questions, nothing to do though, and but it would have to be tied together. And maybe
no, I'm thinking just from this point that the fact that it's already processed from the grain.
It's already is also processed, yes. Actually, it's also probably a subject to that, that definition. So that's also all relevant. And we talked about some other practical points. We talked about the question of arranging flowers with a W into an arrangement that Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to say that that's not the problem with Ma'amer. Possibly it is a problem with Chukim Kli. Others discussed whether or not that was the case or not. But why shouldn't it be Ma'amer? So it could be some focus on Rav Moshe and understand it to mean that you're taking different substances and bring them together, different species and bring them together. That's not Ma'amer. Ma'amer is when you only have one thing you're making a pile of. So we mentioned also off the story that within that idea, some say, okay, fine, so maybe if it's different things, it's not ma'amer. But if you have any two of one thing, it's going to be ma'amer, and it's not going to take away from it the fact that there are other things there. So we questioned that a little bit, because we said that it's still not defined as a pile of X, it's just because you have two X's and 15 other things. Maybe ma'amer, according to this definition, means a pile of X. And yes, taka, maybe the majority of non-related items, maybe would confuse it. We talked a little bit in that context about why there's no issue with Ma'amer when it comes to the Dalet Minim on Sukkot, potentially other issues, but Ma'amer doesn't seem to be a consideration, so that's also relevant to this. But Ramosha's focus may be on that, or it may be that that's just not a functional pile, because it's just for pleasure of looking at it, not for any positive function, so maybe that he doesn't see it as Ma'amer for that reason. And that's also a discussion, so we went through his language together, a little bit of a question to see what exactly the Moshe was focusing on when he says he doesn't think Ma'amer is the relevant issue in that context. And I mentioned also, for example, that the Parthenos has a tshuva about cleaning away the leaves that fall on the street in front of your house. So there, even though that does involve making a pile, but the pile is completely so that you should get rid of it. It's not because you're interested in the pile. So together with the fact that it's generally not mukum pidulo once it lands on the pavement, even though it's theoretically possible you could have pavement directly surrounding the tree, but for the most part the leaves in front of your house have moved from where they originally fell. So with all of that, we thought there is a sad probably to be making. To make these piles on Shabbos if you have to. It's not the most Shabbos-like activity in general, but if you have a great need to do it on that day, it probably is a tzav b'hako. And as I mentioned, making necklaces out of any type of gedulei karka item is presumably an issue, at least with the Rabbanim as well, even if it's not mokum gedulo. But it may be derechumnis, which may actually raise it to a more significant level, but probably at least on a level with the Rabbanim. There is some type of humor involved in that as well. So I think actually we did hit some of the major points that we talked about in terms of the melacha. So any question about any of that? Okay, so just to recap, so especially for those of you who haven't taken a midterm yet, so over this past semester, so we did hakdama to the melacha, we did zareya, we did choresh, we did kotzer, we did ma'amer, we did dash, we did and Tosefta Shabbos and Hanukkah. So hopefully we have some type of insight into those topics. And for tomorrow, again, we'll try to do a little bit of Parshas Vayigash, perhaps a little bit of Parshas Vayechi. And Wednesday should be between us, so please be in touch with me regarding that. Okay. You guys should have a wonderful day. And it should be only good things. And down here, do you want to... Is there a quorum once down here? Do you
have... I will die.
Okay, so everyone in the room wants to down here?
Do
we have
any?
I think you're necessary. Okay. Ready? Yes. Yes. Well, at this point, it probably makes sense to combine them. So let's make an appointment for when do you think we'll be when do you recommend?
You got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking in the dark, I'm in the middle of the night, I'm in the middle of the night.